and say, that is the start. And I'm going to leave that in.
Let's go!
Nice, Gary!
Nice! I don't know, Jeff, has it? I must have missed that.
Is a disgusting act by Randy Moss.
No.
Horacio Fantasia.
One last roll of the dice for Leo! Leo Barry, you star!
I mean, I know he's your captain, but you can't seriously lock him as a
one. Right in front of me! Right in front of me!
Yes, welcome back to Right in Front of Me, the sports podcast where we look at the stories behind the scoreboard. Got to thank classmate and friend of the show, Nell, for that tagline. And we're rejoined by good mate, Paddy Rees. Paddy, how you doing?
Good. Well, I thought I'd give the people what they want and not come on the show for a couple of weeks. So, just apology in advance for the audience.
All right, we just get right into things.
Play ball!
Superstitions, rituals, hoodoos.
Mm.
Teams and players will go to extraordinary lengths to ensure victory. For example, Steve Smith, of course, he wears footy socks while he bats.
Yep, of course.
He also has to have his shoelaces taped up because he doesn't want to see them.
We all have those little things, don't we?
And I was going to ask you, do you have any, Paddy?
So I've 17 seasons deep in soccer, and you can imagine when I was still living at home, my mum loved this one. So if I won a soccer game with those socks, you better believe they're not getting washed.
You're not washing your socks?
Oh, hell no. You're just keeping them straight in the bag until you lose. That's how it works. One, first tip for that is no one's going to mark you. One, because you smell like shit, and that's the only reason. So, hey, if it works, it works. And don't try and fix something that ain't broken.
I was going to say, do you have like a special pair of underwear that you have to wash and clean before and have to wear before each game? Because that's what I used to do. But I didn't know that you didn't wash your socks.
Well, only if you keep winning. You better believe sometimes, there's been some seasons where those socks
smell?
Are looking pearly white.
Well, how do they smell after that famous unbeaten season of yours?
Oh, ripe. Ripe. I'm not sure if there's like a smell feature on a podcast, but I'm sure the listeners out there, they know.
Yeah, look, we'll send out scratch sniff cards for this episode.
Do you have a weird one?
Well, like, on top of wearing, like, the same pair of undies every single time, I make sure to wash them. I'll stress that. I'll wash them before each game.
Right.
I used to not be able to watch my teams play because I used to thought I was...
Yeah, you're
jinx.
The thing.
I'm the curse that means we can't win.
The reason Ash Nagar didn't get 100 in the 2013 Ashes was because my dad got up and went to the bathroom. And that's a fact. On 98, are you taking, like, he literally, literally taking a piss?
Yeah.
Like, that's where the saying, he's taking the piss from.
Yeah.
Because my dad got up, obviously didn't want him to get 100, did he?
No.
Hit it straight to Graham Swan. But as you can tell, I'm not that cut up about it.
There are too many instances of, like, curses and hoodoos happening in sport that they just can't be coincidence. So I'll list off a couple. The first one, it's in American football, in the NFL. Detroit quarterback Bobby Lane, this is back in 1958. He was so upset when he was traded to Pittsburgh that he said the Lions would not win for the next 50 years.
Mm.
So Lions' last championship was in 1957. They haven't won anything since. And since he left in 1958, they've won one playoff game. And then there's also the famous curse of the Bambino in baseball with the Boston Red Sox.
Famously.
So the Bambino is Babe Ruth. Boston was stupid enough to trade him to their rivals, the New York Yankees. And at the time, the Red Sox were the most successful franchise in baseball. After they traded Babe Ruth, they went on an 88-year drought without winning anything.
That's a drought. That's a drought.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one. Point is that there are too many of these moments to just be coincidence. But what if one city would face the brunt of these curses and be starved for success for over 100 years? This is the story of the most cursed city in baseball history.
Strike!
So we're in the state of Illinois. Springfield is the capital, but its largest metropolitan city is Chicago.
Mm.
The Windy City and gateway to America's Midwest, home to some of America's greatest and most iconic sports teams.
Deep Dish Pizza.
Oh, and Deep Dish Pizza as well. You can't forget about that. But we've got the Chicago Bears in the NFL.
Everyone's got a soft spot for the Bears, just because they're crap.
Yeah.
Any team that's crap, you're just like, oh, I've got a soft spot.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Carlton. You also got the Chicago Cubs, Chicago White Sox, and also the Chicago Bulls.
Bulls.
As well.
A couple of handy basketball players play for the Bulls.
So baseball and Chicago, they go hand in hand. The Cubs were a founding member of the National League back in 1876. The White Sox have been part of Major League Baseball, or the MLB, for over a century. However, in the nearly 150 years that either side have featured in the league, the franchises have only won three World Series each, And in that time, both sides have had significant title droughts in between the most recent victories. Their history has been marred by curses, cheating scandals, and a whole lot of heartbreak.
Imagine being a fan. That's where you got to start feeling the pain. Absolutely. That's when you start feeling the burn. Absolutely. And you said to yourself, hey, you know, I'll give this 10 years of loyalty. But then they suck you in, don't they? And then before you know it, they lose and it ruins your week. And that's why we love sport.
Ball!
So I'll start with the Chicago White Sox. So I'm going to take you back to the late 19th century. Major League Baseball was in its infancy, and the Chicago White Sox owner, Charles Comiskey, was notorious for underpaying his players. And back in those days, if you refused any part of your contract, you just didn't play.
You're in the bin.
Exactly. And this was before players are properly compensated for their work.
Sport was a side hustle.
Exactly.
Wasn't it? That wasn't their main job.
Yeah, back in the day, that's what it was. Mm. And players felt they should have been paid more. So a rift came about between the White Sox players, those who were content with their pay and those who weren't. So a group of 8 players, including legendary outfielder Shoeless Joe Jackson, who was named as such because he was once getting blisters in his shoes, and so he went to at bat without any shoes on.
Why?
It's insane.
I'm not prepared to do that. And my foot's made out of skin.
Yeah. And Shoeless Joe Jackson's signature is actually one of the rarest you can get because he didn't actually know how to write at the time. So the ones that we do have are really scribbly and not great.
It's the one you see on porn stars where they come in.
That's exactly what I'm referring to. That is like the holy grail of
that's
like baseball
him. That's the king.
And there have been many fake Shoeless Joe Jackson ones appear on porn stars.
Yeah.
So he was part of the 8 players, and they all agreed that they would collectively fix the upcoming 1919 World Series against the Cincinnati Reds with the backing of a few underworld figures in Chicago, which in the early 20th century, Chicago was just rife with gangsters, all sorts of underworld criminal activity.
Oh, it'd be the place to be if you're a gangster.
Absolutely.
That's where you are. That's home.
Yeah. So they would stand to make $100,000 each, which in 1919
that's
money...
That's a lot of money.
...is a lot of
that's
money.
That's a coin.
Yeah. So to cut to the chase...
100 grand.
The White Sox... Yeah. To cut to the chase, the White Sox lost, but many at the time suspected there was something not quite right. So the following year, a grand jury was set up to investigate, and on September the 28th, 1920, pitcher Eddie Chicote admitted to his role in the scheme, and just like a jigsaw puzzle, one by one, the pieces began to align, and a clear picture was starting to emerge.
There's a bit going on.
Yeah. A trial was set up for June 1921, and it wasn't until a month later that William Sleepy Bill Burns... You got to love these nicknames.
Sleepy Bill and Shoeless Joe Jackson. That's the team you want to be in.
Yeah.
That's it. What's the weirdest sport nickname that you have? In your team? There's a guy on my soccer team.
Yeah.
Who's literally, his name is Apples, right?
Yeah.
Because about 5 years ago, he was like, oh, I'll just bring an apple to training. And everyone's like, eat a bit of fruit, do you? So now he's just Apples. I didn't even know his name. First season, I was like, I don't even want to know your name because you're just Apples.
Yeah, there's a bloke at my club, and for years, everyone has called him Laser. Laser, he's a great guy, like heart of the club. For years, I didn't know his actual name.
The best nicknames are where you don't know the name.
No, and you just call them, that's how they're known, just by their name.
Sorry, back to you, Fridge.
Anyway,
research.
Sleepy Bill Burns admitted that the players had intentionally fixed the series and went into specific details of how the fix came about. Pitchers would intentionally throw the ball wide, elect not to hit the ball whilst at bat, and Burns claimed that Chicote had threatened to throw the ball clear out of the park if it meant that it would result in the White Sox losing the game. What he's describing is that Chicote would field the ball somewhere in the outfield and just throw it into the stands.
Right.
If it had to come to that, he was willing
to
do it.
He would do it.
Yeah. So just to...
I mean, 100 grand.
Oh, 100 grand.
I'd do some weird things for 100 grand.
Yeah. Once this explosive evidence was given, the jury were then sent away to make their decision. It's pretty clear cut. They've admitted to guilt. They've gone... Sleepy Bill has gone into specifics. So how long do you think it took for the jury to reach their verdict? It took them 3 hours to come to a decision.
Did Shoeless Joe Jackson wear shoes to the trial?
Probably. Well, who knows?
That's controversial.
Yeah, that is a bit controversial. And what do you think that verdict was?
Guilty. Well, because they are. Yeah. I mean, he's prepared to throw the ball in the stadium.
It took 3 hours for the jury to come back and find them not guilty.
Just as I was saying, predicted it all along, never guilty. That's insane.
After this trial, the league's reputation was shot. The higher-ups were looking to make a big statement and stamp out match-fixing and other unacceptable behaviour that had become rampant in baseball. A commission was established, and all 8 players involved in the scandal received life bans the day after the courts had found them not guilty. What a roller coaster of emotions.
Imagine you're like, ah, oh, it's all good. I got out unscathed. Oh, wait, I'm banned for life.
The White Sox were then dubbed the Black Sox as they had dirtied up the league. It took an eternity for the White Sox to shake off the tag that they were a dirty team. And for 88 years, they were starved of the ultimate prize.
Mm.
Many called this a simple case of karma. So players have been caught throwing the World Series, the pinnacle of professional baseball. So non-White Sox fans saw this as a bit of poetic justice.
Mm.
You threw away when you know you had a chance to win it. You don't deserve to win it ever again. It's like that mentality of like we're never going to win because of
it's karma
in the past.
Because this has happened.
Yeah. Finally, in 2005, the White Sox would sweep the Houston Astros and win fair and square.
But even then, what? 85 years later.
88.
88 years later.
88 years later.
There'd still be a couple of side mouth comments, wouldn't there be? Oh, probably cheated.
Probably fixed it. The tag has never really gone away.
No.
And it will never. It's like a.
Is it still around to this day?
I believe so. I don't think it's as popular as it was. But it's still around.
It's still around.
Yeah.
It's still known to have happened.
Exactly.
It's not a swept under the carpet thing.
No.
It's the underarm ball.
Batter out.
The Chicago Cubs. They won back-to-back World Series titles in 1907 and 1908. That would be the last success they would taste for a very long time. So the year is 1945, and we're at the home of baseball in Chicago, the iconic Wrigley Field. It's game 4 of the World Series between the Chicago Cubs and the Detroit Tigers. And William Cianis is in attendance. William, he's the owner of the local Billy Goat Tavern, and he's in attendance with his pet goat, Murphy.
As one does. Yeah, I often bring my pet goat to places. Nathan Lyon.
Yeah, exactly. So fans complained that Murphy was causing a bit of a nuisance at the game.
That's weird.
And Cianis was asked to leave.
Mm.
Now, Cianis would bring Murphy all the time. This is the first time anyone ever had any complaints about it.
Of course. Wherever you lay your Murphy, that's your home.
Yep. There are many different accounts as to what Cianis actually said, but an alleged telegram sent to Cubs team owner Philip K. Wrigley stated, and I quote, "You are going to lose this World Series, and you are never going to win another World Series again. You are never going to win a World Series again because you insulted my goat."
See, initially that'd be brushed aside. It'd be like, oh yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming
the Cubs went on to lose that series.
Yes.
And just like that, the curse of the Billy Goat was born.
What I like.
All these incidents I'm about to read out to you are attributed to the curse.
Oh, 100%.
And here's the thing. I've only picked out the best ones.
Right.
Lists. It's a massive list. Yeah. It is a massive list that I was looking at, and it's these. I've just picked out the best ones, the most interesting ones.
Right.
But there are many more, and I highly recommend if you get the chance.
Keep me with the top five.
Yeah. Here we go. 1969.
I'm there.
The New York Mets went on to beat the Cubs in a crucial championship game after a stray black cat strolled at bat and into the Cubs dugout. The Mets went on to win, coming from behind, and won the World Series after they beat the Cubs.
Billy the Goat.
Like, imagine that. Like,
he's in play.
A stray black cat. Like, the pinnacle of, like, omens.
Yeah,
and, like, bad
it's
luck.
Like, that is the pinnacle.
Yeah.
If any, like, and that's all attributed to Billy the Goat.
Yeah.
Fact.
1984. The Cubs were in their first postseason appearance since 1945, the Billy Goat curse was born, and were up 2 games in a best-of-5 series against the San Diego Padres.
They're up, sorry, what?
They're up 2-0 in a best-of-5 series.
Cool.
So
they're well on top.
They need one win.
One win.
One more win.
They're home, surely.
So they give up the next 2 games. Mm. And in game 5, first baseman Leon Durham allegedly had a wet glove. So he let a ground ball hit and it came out of his glove.
Mm.
The Padres would go on to score 4 runs in that 7th inning and win the series.
Do you reckon it was part of the team chat? Do you reckon that 2-0 up, they go, all right, I know there's been talk of the Billy the Goat curse, but boys, we know that's not true. That's where they were wrong.
But it's always in the back of your mind.
It's in the back of your mind, isn't it? They're like, yeah, it's stupid. It's dumb.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's a proven fact.
Yep. 1989.
Mm.
The Cubs had won 93 games in the regular season, one of the best records in the MLB.
So many games. How many games they play?
They play 162. So if you're winning 93, you're doing a pretty good
job. You're having a good season.
You're having a good job.
Yeah.
They faced the San Francisco Giants in the National League Championship Series. and this was in a best of seven series, the Cubs held a lead in each of the last three games, but some player and manager meltdowns, just spinning the dummy, just things compounding on top of each other, and many blunders would mean that they would choke and lose all three of those games where they had a lead at some stage.
Yeah.
And they just imploded.
They just went nuts.
And that's falling back to what you're saying of like, yeah, you'd speak about it, but it's in the back of your mind and the history of this curse is just getting more and more real. There's, and you just can't shake off the tag.
Everyone knows that team though, don't they? That just like almost find a way to lose. And you can almost, sports one of those things where you can almost determine the outcome of an event way before it's even happened. Like you can almost watch the TV and go, I know it's going to happen now. And it's often with your team, and when they're on top, you go, I know they're going to blow this. And as soon as you have that in your mind, it's almost like the players have the same thing in their mind. And you're just like, what's going on?
Yep.
But I didn't know my sporting teams was also attributed to Billy the Goat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
No.
So, 2003, the Cubs held a 3-2 game lead heading into Game 6 of their clash in the NLCS, the National League Championship Series, against the Florida Marlins. The Cubs held a 3-0 lead in the 8th inning of 9 and looked to be in complete control, and a win would see them advance to the World Series. In the most famous, or I guess possibly infamous, fan interaction in sports history, Marlins second baseman Luis Castillo hit a foul ball that went straight up into the night sky. Cubs outfielder Moses Alou was parked underneath it when Cubs fan Steve Bartman reached out to catch the ball.
Oh.
Got a finger to it.
Is that the one in the, like, where it's literally about to go in the crowd?
Yep.
Is that that?
That's that incident, and caused Alou to drop the catch.
Kidding. I didn't know that was, like, an important game. I just thought that was, like, a normal. I've seen that video so many times.
Yeah. That would have been the second out of the inning, and crucial to the Cubs' chances of making it to the World Series for the first time since 1945.
Yeah.
Then they just probably went Wii baseball mode and just hit a million out of the park.
The Cubs would then choke and give up the next 8 runs to lose 8-3. The Marlins tied up the series.
They lost 8-3 after being 3-0 up in the 8th
inning. Yeah. So the Marlins tied up the series at 3-3.
That's harder to do.
Yeah.
Just press A and B on your remote. Splitters.
And that's the thing. It's like, oh, okay, a fan touched the ball, blah, blah, blah.
8-3.
Like, okay, dropped it. It's fine. They've only got a guy on first base after it. We've got 2 outs. We've got a 3-0 lead.
You're home.
You go up the next
you're not
runs.
Home, but you're like, I'd rather be in this position.
We're in
than
a
the
better
other.
Position. Yeah. Oh, and they go up 8 runs.
8.
Yeah.
How many they give up in the 8th innings? Or did they give that all up in the 9th after he dropped? Or did he drop the catch and then they just went bang?
I'm not too sure, but I think, but all you need to know is that they got the next 8 runs. The Marlins then tied up the series and won Game 7, again, coming from behind to win.
Like, you can't tell me that there's not a higher power at work.
No, there's something going on. So,
what are you, like, Well, do you genuinely believe in, like, superstitions?
Absolutely,
and
I do.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I do. And Steve Bartman, fans chanted asshole, like pretty much the entirety of the rest of the game.
To your own fan, yeah.
Towards Steve Bartman.
Yeah.
And he remained for the whole game. He didn't leave. He stayed for the entire game.
He's a brave man.
Beers were dumped on him. He was being hurled abuse and threats as well.
Yeah.
Security had to escort him out of the ground.
Imagine that, like a Premier League game or like an NHL game though. That man wouldn't have left alive.
No.
Wouldn't.
There were calls for blood for him.
Yeah.
Back in 2003, so Bartman's personal information was leaked online. And as many as 6 police cars were stationed outside of his house. The prospect of witness protection was even offered to him.
Police stations?
Yeah.
Like, 6 police stations? 6 police,
police cars. Yeah. He's like, yeah. So they took this really seriously.
Imagine this was in the days of social media.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking. That would have been even worse.
That would have been insane.
I wouldn't know how to
No.
I would just want
to
let a
whole I'd just move to like Greenland or something. Yeah. Just like as far away as possible.
Just join the bonus. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Bartman seat, aisle 4, row 8, seat 113, is now a tourist attraction at Wrigley Field.
Bartos.
Yeah.
So was it worth it? Because now you have a seat in the stadium.
Exactly.
You're out. Change sides.
All curses have to be broken. Several attempts were made to break the Billy Goat curse. They're all fascinating. And again, just like with the Billy Goat curse themselves, too big of a list to go on. But these are just the ones that stood out in terms of trying to break the curse. And it just goes to show the lengths that Cubs fans went to in order to achieve success. Like, they were desperate at this stage.
Well, it would almost be like every game you lost, you'd attribute it to it.
Yeah.
Like, it'd almost get to that stage, wouldn't it?
Oh, well, that's what the list was. Like, it was like incidents that, sure, could have happened, but again, it just comes back to
it
the
like,
Billy
ordered a hot dog, got a salad. Oh,
yeah.
Goat.
Billy. So, a Greek Orthodox priest sprayed holy water in and around the Cubs' dugout. Didn't work?
No. Which is weird, because you'd think it would.
Yeah, exactly. A social enterprise called Reverse the Curse, I love this, by the way, which gave impoverished families in developing countries goats as a, as a weird sort of, like, redemption in, like, okay, we pissed off a goat back in 1945. Let's give impoverished families goats that can give them, like, milk, cheese, a commodity to trade. Like, yeah, like pay it forward sort of good deed.
Whilst you think this might sound ridiculous,
yeah,
it rhymes. All right? Reverse the Curse.
Reverse the Curse.
Rhymes. So I can attest to that kind of being, you know, that might work.
Yeah.
But did it?
Well, I guess so, because the curse broke. But it took a while for the Reverse the Curse.
Yeah, 100, yeah.
Weird. The Curse. And then this is the most bizarre one, I think. A severed goat's head was delivered to the Cubs owner in 2013.
Yeah.
How does that help?
No. Why would... That's like the reverse psychology on the curse.
Like, you've already pissed off a goat.
Is that what I mean? But is it like...
No, like a cut off head. Like a goat's head.
Well, we've always said two wrongs make a right. we've always said that. Especially off air.
These are just some of the weird things that fans went to. The lengths they went to break the curse. After 108 long years and one of the most enthralling World Series of all time, the Chicago Cubs broke the Billy Goat curse against the Cleveland Indians in 7 games. They had to do it the hard way. They had to outlast the Indians in the 10th inning in Game 7.
It's a long game.
Yep. It was one of the more famous World Series of all time. And it was probably the World Series that got me into baseball. Back and forth. It was massive, and all that allure of like, oh, the Cubs are going to win. And then when they won, and it was at Wrigley Field in Game 7 as well, when they won, pandemonium.
Scenes. Because, it's almost worth it.
Well, because none of the fans in attendance were even alive to have seen them win the last one.
No.
There wouldn't have been a Cubs fan alive at the time, over 108 years ago.
Well, you'd think not. And if you do remember it...
Hit us up.
Let us know. It's almost like once you break it, though, they're just going to keep on breaking. It's like with England penalty shootout. It's almost like like when they broke it in the World Cup. It's almost like every time they're in a penalty shootout, you know, you're like, oh, it's going to win.
Mm.
It's back.
Mm.
Yeah. Did that happen? Like, did they keep the momentum flowing? Like, was it just World Series is coming out their ass after this, or is it...
No, so that's the only World Series they've won in the past 5 years.
I mean, so hard, which is fine.
Which is incredibly hard to win a World Series, but, they've achieved success.
Good things.
Like, they've made playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, they've been a good enough side.
The curse is broken.
Yeah. At the end of that, just sit up, rest your laurels.
If you lose, it's not the curse, it's because you played shit.
Yeah, you can't blame it on the curse anymore.
No.
Home run!
But after all that, do you still believe in curses?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I think sport's one of those completely weird things that there are certain things that you can't really pinpoint why, and it almost seems unfair at times.
Mm.
And I think that, 100%. I mean, I play cricket, soccer. I mean, well, cricket and golf, for me, are like two of the most superstitious things in the world because, hey, whilst you can almost, you feel like you're in control at one point, then the next point is a completely different sport.
Mm.
And I feel like you can just get inside your head. As soon as you're inside your head, you've lost it. So yes, 100%, Billy the Goat is real.
Yeah, I'm a big believer of curses and superstitions. I support Collingwood and the old adage, the Collywobbles in grand finals, we'd always choke. Good counter-argument for like curses being real or not is that it gets inside the head and it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you believe in the curse that much, then of course, if you go in with that mentality, of course you're going to lose.
Mm.
But I think that just adds to it. I think that's just a part of it.
That's like, part of the curse.
Like a bloke goes to the World Series with his goat, gets kicked out, and says, you're never going to win again because you insulted my goat.
Yeah.
And then all these little things happen, like a black cat running onto the field. You can't explain that. And
of course it's
then like choking. A fan comes out and puts his hand out and tries to get the ball.
It's like if you hear stories about, you know, guys climbing up, you know, a treacherous mountain, you hear about all the stories of people that have gone before, and you go, you can't just take that out of your head when you go climb that mountain.
No.
No, so of course it's gonna contribute. What's the weirdest thing? Like, can you pinpoint a time where you've done something completely weird to hold together a superstition? Like in terms of like when you watch an AFL or watching something, have you been like, I'm gonna sit on this couch until something happens? Or cricket?
In cricket, like when I play, I am big into making sure I've got pretty much all my stuff on. Like even if I'm 3 or 4 wickets out, I just like have all my stuff on. And I like to do the scoring.
You like to score?
I like to score.
Do you reckon you scoring?
Because
like we got if you're square leg umpire, because sometimes we have to go to a stint.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's good stints and bad stints. If we're going well, you bet that guy's going to stay out there for 2 hours.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because he's doing really well. He's not coming off.
We haven't lost
any wickets. He's staying out there.
Yeah, I like scoring because it keeps me interested in the game. At least, like, so I have to pay attention to every single ball. It also means it all says, okay, I know what's required of me when I go out there. Like, if I'm going out there when we're, you know, 4 for 30 odd or whatever.
So it's not superstition, it's just tactical.
It's just more tactical, make sure that, like, I know where to go in the game. And every time I've done it, like, I've been all right. But one big thing I have when I play finals for my footy team, always have to wear my long sleeve jersey. I wore it in my grand final.
Short sleeves village.
Yeah, but I wore it in my grand final a few years ago when it was 28 degrees.
Yeah, that'd be hot.
Yeah, and we won, so.
So, job done. Well, I have to listen to Rudimental, Feel the Love, because I listened to it when I was in under 13 soccer, and I scored a goal in the final. So, if you don't, that's the only reason I'm on here. I just want to tell that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, if I play in any final, that's the song that's coming on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because that worked that one time, and therefore that was the reason.
Where I'll leave this story, I'll leave it on a positive note, because we've talked about a lot of losing and a lot of heartbreak and whatnot.
Where will you leave it?
So, Steve Bartman. So, we'll go back to him. When the Cubs won in 2016, 13 years after the incident happened.
It's now known as the fateful day.
Yeah. And he was pretty much known as a bit of he was a recluse afterwards. Like, he gave one statement after the fact. Like, to Anthony, he said, look, I'm sorry. I wasn't watching. I was just watching the ball. Which, in all fairness to him.
To be fair, like, you see the clip. And he's not like he's reaching over, but he's not like on the field. He's not streaking.
No, exactly. And like the ball has gone straight up in the air.
Just
and
lack
he's
of awareness.
Thought, oh,
he's just
I'm
at the game.
It. And he's got his Walkman in his ear as well. He's listening to the commentary of the game. Yeah. So he's probably just lost in the moment. The Cubs, when they won in 2016, gave him a ring.
No.
Gave him a championship ring after they won the World Series to say, hey, mate, for all the crap that you've received after the past season, here it is. And they said, do you want to have like a public thing? And he said, no, I don't want to
Hell
be
no.
public anymore.
But is he almost a cult figure now?
Well, but they did give it to him and said, look, we have given it to him. He didn't want to be a part of it because he just like, why
no,
would you?
That's fair. Because you're that guy.
You are that guy. You'll always, it's called the Steve Bartman incident.
Bartman's got a seat.
He's got a seat at
he's got
Wrigley
a,
Field.
And he's got a ring.
He's got a
I
ring.
I don't care how much hate I'm Which, getting. If I'm a diehard fan of any team and I've got a ring and a seat and I haven't played, job done.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice touch to give him that ring and look. And at the end of the day, he's a massive Cubs fan, so you know he deserves it.
It's out of the park. That's the game.
That's another episode done.
Sports, one of those things that, hey, if you don't believe in superstitions, then you haven't played it.
Thank you, Paddy, and thank you very much for listening to another episode of Right in Front of Me, where we look at stories behind the scoreboard. Thank you very much, and we'll catch you next time.
Crowd cheers. Here's Siddle. Here. Wherever you've been watching this brilliant game of ours around the planet, how much did you love it?